Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. I'm Yannis Papadakis, business development manager at CREXI and today's host. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics and conversations with featured experts to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news in commercial real estate. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome and thank you all for joining us for this week's episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. I'm your host, Yannis Papadakis, and today we are thrilled to be sitting with Garrett Gatton, commercial realtor at Hartsock Realty. A bit about our guest. Garrett was thrust into the world of real estate investing by joining a commercial brokerage specializing in helping the investment community. After seeing the massive wealth building opportunity buying and holding real estate brought, Garrett and his team began acquiring single family, multifamily, and mobile home parks. Additionally, Garrett and his co-host Seth Simonillo launched the RE Invest podcast, which brings weekly content to show others how they can maximize their life through the power of real estate investing. Garrett, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having us here today. I'm excited.
Just covered a little bit about your background, but I'd love to briefly learn more about your career path and how you got started on the real estate path.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. To my shame, I was like, radar was never on the horizon. I didn't come from like a business background. My parents had public service jobs, very much kind of entrenched in that side of things. So I kind of stumbled across real estate. I was in between jobs and I sought out my now broker. At the time, I had known him from a different capacity. We had done some nonprofit work together. And I said, hey, I'm looking for a job. What makes a good real estate agent? And he rattled off a couple things that checked the box. So I jumped on, not really knowing what real estate was. And I quickly found out how powerful it really was.
Now, when you first got started, can you talk a little bit about some mentors maybe you had along the way and maybe some early lessons when you got your start?
Yeah. So prior to real estate, I did some fundraising for a nonprofit organization that worked with youth. And in that capacity for my job, I had to get in touch with a lot of business owners. And through interacting with business owners, it kind of forced me to come from their perspective and their lens. And that really exposed me to business and all things real estate. So then when I stepped into this capacity, I had learned some lessons from them about just how to operate a business, how to deal with people. That really, when you boil business down, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, it's all about people. And then my broker, Jeff Dalmage, when I started, he was a huge mentor for me because he was actually an investor before he bought Hartsock Realty. And so that gave him that investment background. And it is shocking to me how many real estate agents and brokers help people buy and sell real estate all the time, but never do it for themselves. So he cast that vision for me of, hey, I can actually create wealth and income streams for myself and help other people do it as well. So he was very formative for me. He was kind of grassroots grown. When he bought the brokerage, it was an REO company. So we handled primarily foreclosures. And he was, I think he was in the top five in the state of Ohio in terms of commercial brokers by transaction volume because of how many houses he moved his first year. So he got a ton of reps in really fast. And that just gave him a ton of experience then to be able to pass on. And he was an open book for me too. So, you know, that was super helpful. I mean, he probably expedited my real estate career by about 3 to 4 years. So, yeah.
Wow. It's valuable having somebody that, you know, is not only experienced, but they themselves gone through the process quickly, you know, really kind of accelerates your ability to kind of learn and jump right in. Any early lessons that you feel like you took away, either, you know, positively or negatively, you know, that was either something that maybe a favorite mistake that was made or, you know, anything that course corrected you or kind of informed how you wanted to move forward in your career?
Yeah. It's funny. I remember I would sit in front of my computer for a solid 6 months of being in real estate, and I would be like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And my coworker, Dave, he told me one day, honestly, one of the best pieces of advice that I got early on in my career is he said, listen, you got to fake it till you make it. And probably people have mixed feelings about that kind of advice, right? We're not talking about pulling the wool over somebody's eyes, you know, and portraying yourself as somebody that you're not. But I had to interact with very sophisticated business owners and investors early on when I started my job. And I was still learning the lingo. I felt like I was building a plane in the air. And really the only way that you can learn how to do something is to get in and do it. So I would, what's a BPO? Okay, well, I'll go do a BPO, you know, and let's go on a pre-listing appointment and let's talk about the market with somebody. And you know, my tool belt was so limited back then, but still stepping out there outside of my comfort zone for the first 2 years, really, it took me to feel a sense of being comfortable in those conversations and settings. But yeah, fake it till you make it. And I just had to get in there and get reps, and that's really the best way to learn. So, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about some fundamental tenets to your work ethic that you maintain today?
Yeah. So I think it's funny, like for the Reinvest podcast, we interview people weekly that are successful in the real estate investing kind of industry, the whole scope of it. And I think it's really popular to come across people that are just workhorses and they burn the candle from both ends nonstop, you know, kind of Steve Jobs, Elon Musk mentality of like, I'm always working, I'm always there. What motivates me is really not the task and accomplishment. I've kind of had to learn about myself that what motivates me is people. So one of the things that drives me forward in our business, whether it's Reinvest with our podcast and some of the investments that we do, or it's the real estate commercial side, helping our clients with investments, it's people. It's people counting on me to provide a service, and it's building a reputation, especially in a small community. It's easy to be very transactional and as a real estate agent. And there's a lot of experiences and words that come to mind when you say that you're a real estate agent with people. Some have had very negative experiences and some have had very positive experiences. So, you know, we try really hard to build a reputation that's going to last in our community for a long time. So people drive me. And one of the big things you talk about tenets that I kind of operate my business on is just being a lifelong learner. You know, real estate is such a vast industry, and there's all different types of asset classes, and there's different problems that you're always encountering. And essentially, we get paid to solve people's problems. So there's always new problems. You're always learning something new. So by being a lifelong learner, I'm okay with telling somebody that I don't know an answer to a question they might have, but I'll go find that answer, and you know, I can put that on my tool belt moving forward. So yeah, just being humble, being aggressive, and being willing to do some legwork and find an answer for somebody, and then just being honest that you might not know it. But yeah, pointing back to what you do know. So.
Do you have any, you know, habits or daily practices that have become essential to your career?
I love to read. I'm notorious for starting a lot of books and not finishing them. So I have probably 4 or 5 books that I'm in the process of reading right now. But personal development is huge. It really is, because for me, I'm a real estate agent, I'm an investor, but I'm also a husband and a father. I'm a friend, you know, I'm involved in my community. And so when I grow individually, all of those roles that I have and facilitate improve as well. So like right now I'm reading Atomic Habits, you know, cause I'm by nature somebody that, I drift, right? I start a new idea and sticking with it's difficult. So that kind of helps anchor me, into building consistency. So reading has been huge. I'm also, I love to ask questions. So, you know, in my business, I network a lot with people and I just try and listen, you know, I try and glean from their experiences, that I can learn from. So definitely asking questions and listening to people is huge. And then just from a health standpoint, trying to improve my health, exercise consistently, and all of that just, you know, funnels into the mindset that you have when you approach your business. So those are probably the big three.
Nice. What else are you reading? I'm curious.
So from, you know, The Atomic Habits more as the mindset, I just started a nutrition book. It's called like The Science of Nutrition. And then from a spirituality perspective, I'm reading a book called All of God, which kind of helps more of a spirit level. So I try and hit something that addresses, you know, each part of who we are from a growth standpoint. And then I'm trying to think of a business book that I'm working through right now. Traction. Working through Traction right now, which is like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Traction. I mean, that's on everybody's business library. So
nice. Switching gears a little bit, let's get a little bit into your market of specialty. You work primarily in Northwestern Ohio. What sets your market apart from other Midwest regions?
Yeah, so Northwest Ohio, Lima specifically, I think the big thing that we have to offer is high cash flow and low barrier to entry. So we talk with investors all the time, and you'd be surprised how many eyes are looking to the Midwest right now when it comes to real estate investment. And I know we'll talk, I think, later in the show about what types of investors are coming into our area. But I mean, and I don't want to overstate this, to say that you could throw a dart and invest in something that's going to cash flow might be an overstatement, because there is definitely skill and strategy involved with that. But you can buy a lot in Lima, be it multifamily or just single family residential real estate, and it can cash flow on an income investment basis. And the low barrier to entry is the fact that our price per unit is very cost effective compared to other parts of the country.
And, you know, coming from California, can you tell a little bit about what's the weather like for an owner in that market, right? Is it pretty favorable for landlords? Are there a ton of tenant protections there that make it difficult to operate if, let's say, you know, you do run into some snafus or road bumps along the way?
Yeah, you probably could not find another state more opposite than California when it comes to landlord-tenant laws. it is very much in favor of the landlord, which makes our market very attractive for people. So I've been in a couple of masterminds, and inevitably in any of those conversations, one of the criteria that investors look for in terms of where they're going to invest, you know, at a national level is landlord-tenant laws and how friendly they are to landlords. So in our area, but more in our state, it's very favorable. I mean, 30-day evictions. Mobile homes get a little bit different, but that's going to be anywhere. It's very attractive for people that way when it comes to maintaining control over your investment.
And then what does the current investor activity look like? What kind of capital is entering the space now?
Yeah, so that's actually been really interesting. I'm going to say over the last 3 to 5 years, we have seen an uptick in investment from out of the state, primarily from the East Coast and the West Coast. And we've seen this this cascade kind of event or phenomena where as returns get squeezed in tier one markets, those investors look to chase that yield somewhere else. And so then they go typically to like more of a tier two market, which then drives and compresses those rates in that market. And those tier two investors end up looking in more tertiary markets. So we've seen people from California, from New York, from larger metros, even in our state like Columbus, looking into places like Lima that aren't maybe quite as consolidated as some of these larger areas where there's a lot of private equity and a lot of REITs chasing some of the bigger investments. It's I wouldn't say it's private equity in our area, but it's a lot of private investors who, you know, their capital is going to go a lot further in our market than it does where they are from maybe originally. And especially with the appreciation in home prices and just real estate in general, a lot of those guys are cashing out or refinancing, you know, in the last 3 years and taking that and deploying it in an area like ours. And they look at our returns and they just kind of scratch their head comparatively to what's normal to them, right? So, you know, in our area, people are, they can get 10, 15% cash on cash return on the right investment. And maybe you're used to investing in New York, kind of that metro there just for the sake of tax, you know, advantages. So, yeah, it's been very attractive to people who are used to compressed returns.
What opportunities in your market offer a competitive advantage compared to others of comparable size?
So, you know, again, kind of in that five-year window, Lima's rental market had been historically depressed. And I'm going to say this is not like a quantified number, but more just observationally. So our property management company oversees like 300 plus units in our area. And then obviously we're connected from a real estate perspective on the market side. And in the last 5 years, I'm going to say that rents have probably grown by about 60% from where they were. And proportionally, you know, the cost per unit hasn't grown 60%. So the rental market is stronger than it's ever been in Lima. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge advantage that we have over some other areas that have already been at that rate, if that makes sense.
Right. As you work in multifamily specifically, what does the pulse look like in that arena now?
So that's probably the one challenge to Lima is the multifamily stock that we have in terms of how many units are available is relatively low. It's lower than it should be. So on one hand, that creates demand because there's a constraint on supply. There just hasn't been a lot of building. So, you know, going back historically in the 70s, Lima was very depressed. Some of the fall off the railroad industry created some fallout. And those voids that were created really hadn't been filled with new construction. We have a couple of investors locally that are building some townhouse multifamily. But I mean, honestly, I couldn't tell you the last time there was a brand new multifamily property that I can think of one that's about 100 units. And so the supply is relatively small in Lima. There's a lot of single family portfolios. Mm-hmm. So people do a lot of duplexes, quadplexes, 8-unit brick townhomes, single family rentals, and aggregate those into a portfolio in Lima. That's pretty common.
We actually have a single family rental portfolio on our auction platform now. Well, by the time this airs, it may have already been sold, but at the time of recording, we actually have one of those on our auction platform currently. So I am a bit familiar that in, you know, not just in Lima, but in other markets as well in Ohio, that you do see a good amount of single family rental portfolios, you know, bundled together as opposed to yep. multifamily deals themselves. This kind of leads into the next question. What are you seeing in terms of shifts in, you know, demographics there? Is there a greater demand for multifamily properties because of the demographic shift? What are you seeing on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, Lima is not going to be like a high growth population area. I would definitely say that we've stabilized. Some of the exciting things in our area that are going on that you just probably wouldn't know if you're not from the area is from a demographic standpoint, the economic base is we have two major health network systems. We have a refinery that stimulates a lot of economic kind of subsidiary companies that feed off of that as well. And then a huge manufacturing base. One of the trends though that we've seen, probably kind of encouraged by COVID, was a lot of people who had graduated from Lima and left and had maybe, you know, gone out of the area in search of another job or to go into a place that has more amenities to live in. We saw a recapture of some of that demographic. So, I mean, I was working with homeowners that were relocating into the area to be around family, to come back from college because of COVID. Wanting to maybe leave the metropolitan environment that they were in, And whether it's commuting or remote work, Lima had a low cost of living compared to what they were used to. So there was a lot of factors, I think, within that that we saw some people. It wasn't like there was droves of people, but I definitely saw a noticeable trend of you know, either through social media, seeing people come back into the area or working with clients directly. The other thing too is one of our health network systems started a graduate medical program. So that's been drawing in doctors and resident students that are going to relocate into the area. And then the last thing is our economic development groups have done a really great job of attracting manufacturers into the area to create new job growth. And with us being along I-75, the I-75 corridor has quickly become a place that a lot of developers have set their sights on with the advent of more distribution needs and warehousing space. So us being located along that corridor has been very beneficial for our area.
Excellent. Curious, what's your overall outlook for the Northern Ohio market heading into the second half of 2023 and beyond that?
Yeah, our greatest strength is probably our greatest weakness. So people look at the Midwest, and historically it's not been super flashy, super sexy when it comes to appreciation growth in some of the areas that comparatively to other parts in the country. However, I think the big strength there is we don't hit the highs and we don't hit the lows the same as other. We're not as quite as exposed to other major areas in the country. So to answer your question, heading into the second quarter here, and even the third quarter, I think a lot of the price readjustment that we've seen, I think a lot of it's happened, and I don't foresee a ton of adjustment further moving forward. So that's helpful for investor sentiment because they can kind of wrap their head around maybe what the new returns are going to look like. There's still a discrepancy, and this is everywhere, between kind of seller expectation and the cost of money for buyers getting into the market. So I think that gap has to close a little bit. But in our area, I don't feel like we're 15%, you know, like we're due another 15% price correction.
Right. I mean, just on the cash on cash you were talking about earlier, it seems to me that, you know, there's still a good amount of padding there where, you know, currently where interest rates are, you can still finance a deal and it pencils and makes sense, you know, in your neck of the woods. Whereas, you know, looking at markets like California, like, you know, Miami or New York, you know, that same type of financing may just not pencil now with those low returns.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the other thing I would probably maybe add to that is in our region, because a lot of the deals tend to be a smaller price point, I would say the financing strategy is different than in other areas. So we were seeing, you know, we would go to conferences like the Best Ever Conference this last year that was in Salt Lake City. And we were talking to a lot of investors about bridge debt and how that was a fundamental component to how they were financing and sourcing deals. In our area, most people aren't using bridge debt to finance a deal. They're just going to go to a regional or local bank and get, you know, a 20, 25 year term and amortized loan on a property, just a straight commercial loan that's going to be a 5/5 arm. And that's a very stable financial product. If you're in the space where you have to use bridge debt to make a deal work, that's where people are getting in trouble right now across the country because of how variable it is. And you don't have the same exit or the same, I guess, surety of that financing. So I think the stability of how people are financing deals is going to be helpful. I still see banks, and we've got commercial lenders that we work with actively to help our clients purchase stuff. We're not, I mean, all the local banks that I'm talking to, they're not saying, hey, we're not lending. You know, their DSCR might be like 1.3 now instead of 1.25. But they're still communicating, hey, we want to underwrite deals.
Nice. What's the biggest piece of advice you'd give potential investors or even your peers working in this market, and why?
I would say it's easy to listen to podcasts, predominantly maybe news headlines, and kind of walk away with like this fear-mongering sense of impending doom that can creep in. And I think you just got to be careful what you're listening to before you draw a conclusion. I would encourage people to not just look at one side of what you're hearing, but to kind of look at the whole. And what I mean by that is people are making money in every real estate market, right? Whether it's a seller's market or a buyer's market, there's always a way to make money in real estate. You just got to figure out what side of the equation to be on. And I still think in our area, it's an appropriate time to buy. I think you have to know what your new underwriting assumptions are. But once you kind of readjust and recalculate all that, keep buying, keep investing. Don't sit on the sidelines. Be wise about it. And then the last thing I would say right now is cash flow is huge. So, you know, I still have investors that are buying land or vacant commercial assets that are essentially a dead asset right now. That's not what I would be buying. I mean, you want something that's going to cash flow and service the mortgage, and you can stress test if there's a fluctuation or dip in rents. And the beautiful thing about like multifamily or even residential real estate is not all of your eggs are in one basket. Mm-hmm. So if you have a single tenant retail establishment or commercial property, you know, you may feel a sense of security with that lease in place because they're a business owner and that affords you more rights as the landlord. But at the end of the day, if somebody files bankruptcy, I mean, what's 100% of zero? Like, there's always going to demand for residential real estate. So
right,
buy cash flow and keep getting in the market.
Nice. Well, given your specialized background and expertise, I'm sure our listeners would be curious about your answers to a few rapid fire questions, words of advice. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's go. All right. So if you were given $50 million today and had to invest it immediately, what would your go-to asset type and location be and why?
Yeah. So it's embarrassing probably how often I think about this question. the other night I was putting my 18 month old child down and I was laying in front of her crib while she's falling asleep. And I was like, what would I do with like $100 million, you know, and how would I invest that into real estate? So I think this is kind of what I've boiled it down to. And I might answer your question a little differently than what you had posed it, but, I'm still bullish on multifamily. I still think that there's good demand there. I think the pool of what is a good deal has lessened, but I think that there's still good deals out there to purchase. So I would probably diversify into multifamily in Midwest markets in the Southeast. And then I would also place probably about 20% of that, maybe not quite 20%, 5 to 10% of it in just like passive investments, syndications where I wouldn't have to touch it. I would take about a third of it and put it into alternative commercial real estate. So I know it's been a big buzzword like mobile home parks, self-storage. Mm-hmm. For a reason, I think it's been that way. But again, it funnels into recessionary resistant cash flow commercial real estate assets. So, multifamily in the Southeast and Midwest, self-storage, and mobile home parks.
Nice. All right. Next one's not a trick question. Favorite tool or software you use on the job?
Yeah. So obviously, Crexie. I'm just kidding. so I thought about this one. I think, honestly, one of the biggest tools that we use on a daily basis, whether it's as an investor or I have my realtor hat on, my broker hat on, is a really good underwriting template. So
are we talking Excel model?
Yes. I nerd out on Excel. Admittedly, I'm not the guy that builds it, but I am the guy that uses it and appreciates the hours that somebody spent putting these custom equations in these different boxes.
I was going to say, you know, AI can build those out for you. I was just watching something yesterday. Somebody that was a, analyst at a huge investment firm spent half his career building those Excel spreadsheets with, you know, all those formulas. And now there's AI protocols that can do it in seconds.
Wow. That is awesome and also super discouraging for the guy that spent hours of time on that.
Right.
Well, that's the thing is that's going to be so disruptive. Like you understand why people are blowing the whistle, being like, maybe we should rethink the societal implications and ramifications of AI, because it's like, it's like the possibilities are endless. I mean, we've used AI a little bit even to take our podcast transcripts and like take the audio version and transcribe them into a transcript. And that's like 101 level stuff. I think it was my buddy, I think Seth actually, he told me that somebody gave like $1,000 to an AI and they were like, hey, go invest this money and, you know, like make it $5,000. And it went into the internet and started buying stuff and executed a whole strategy. So it freaks me out for sure, but it does not surprise me that somebody's creating underwriting templates with it. But for sure, that's one of the biggest tools we use. If it's helping somebody evaluate a property for purchase or even listing it, we kind of look at it through the eyes of a buyer to price it, you know, like anybody would, so that we can coach our clients into what a realistic range is going to be and who the end user and the highest and best use for that real estate is going to be. And then obviously too, when we're evaluating investments for ourselves and our investors, we use that. So a good underwriting tool.
Nice. And then what is the most common misconception about your job or industry?
Yeah, Zillow has done a great job of making everybody think they're a real estate expert. everybody thinks that Zestimate is gospel. I know that's the residential side, but the mindset kind of creeps into the commercial side as well.
Right.
We deal with a lot of admittedly very savvy and capable owner operators in real estate, and they're used to getting stuff done. They're used to making deals happen. They're not adverse to the legal side of structure and real estate deals, investments, creative finance. So you have to bring your A game into those conversations with people to win their business. Every once in a while, you run into somebody who thinks that they can do it better than you. And it could be a variety of factors. I'm going to say 9 times out of 10, hiring a qualified real estate professional is going to, in the end, benefit you greatly than trying to sell or dispose of a property on your own. So I think the biggest misconception is that people think they can navigate the nuances of commercial real estate. And it is a very wide world and a very deep pool to kind of to play in. So find a good real estate professional. It'd be worth your while.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, going towards the people that are already engaged in the space and successful in the space seems to yield the best results when it comes to wanting to jump in or learn. So great words of advice there. And speaking of words of advice, any parting words you'd like to share with our audience before we wrap up?
Yeah, I would say, number one, real estate's one of the best ways to build wealth and maximize your life. I think as I've gotten into real estate, when I first got into real estate, I thought real estate investing was the complete package and solution. Now you get around people who have successful businesses, who invest in the market, who use life insurance policies as a vehicle to invest in different things. There's a lot of strategies out there. I still think real estate is going to be my kind of the bulk of my portfolio. But I would say, yeah, just look for a whole strategy. You know, don't get pigeonholed into one thing because that's what you know. There's a lot of really awesome ways to diversify and make money and build wealth. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights. I know you're really busy and we appreciate you taking the time to sit with us and share with our audience. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch? Email, social media, of course, the podcast.
Yeah. So you can reach out to Seth and I directly. We're on social media. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. My email is really easy. It's garrett.gatton@gmail.com. And Seth is seth.simonillo@gmail.com. Feel free to shoot us an email if you've got questions. We do have the Reinvest podcast, so look us up. We're on all the major platforms, Spotify, iTunes. We do weekly episodes like this to show people and expose them to the different strategies within real estate. So, yeah.
Excellent. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexi.com/podcast. That's go.crexi.com/podcast. And sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexy Podcast on your favorite podcast app, or check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/Crexy for video recordings of each episode. Goodbye, stay well, we'll see you next time.